When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Today's episode is presented by Meta.
A virtual reality platform created by Fundamental VR and Orbis International helps train doctors to treat cataracts, resulting in more confident surgeons operating worldwide. Meta and the Metaverse are having impact today.
We are here to show support for Moldova, for Ukraine, and the wider European community. We have common challenges, security, energy, and connectivity, which we can only address through common action.
That's European Parliament President Roberta Metsola speaking on her way into the European Political Community Summit in Moldova.
The risks posed by Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine is one that can only be met with a test of our resilience, and I'm sure that we will meet this moment. I'm very happy to see so many leaders of Western Balkan countries here, because we will plead for faster, more urgent, and more deep European integration for these countries.
Over 40 heads of state are gathered for the second meeting of the Pan-European Forum. It's a big moment for Moldova. Last June, the country reached a milestone in its efforts to join the EU, when it was granted status as an official candidate country, along with Ukraine. Here's European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
I warmly congratulate President Zelensky, President Sandu, President Zurabishvili. All three countries are part of our European family. We've never let any doubt about that. And today's historic decision by leaders confirms that. It grants all three the perspective of EU accession, and it lays down the path ahead.
Now, nearly a year later, the country is hosting the biggest political event in its history, and the stakes could not be higher. I'm Suzanne Lynch, Politico's Chief Brussels correspondent, coming to you this week from Moldova, where the second meeting of the European Political Community is taking place. We're going to discuss what this gathering of European leaders hopes to achieve and what it means for Moldova, an ex-Soviet state sandwiched between Ukraine and the EU. It's a country at a crossroads as it tries to chart a path towards EU membership, all the time under Russia's shadow. So to discuss further, I'm joined by my colleague Clea Calcutt, our France correspondent who's covering the summit with me here in Moldova.
Hello, Suzanne.
So, listeners, we have to apologise for the background noise. We're coming to you from the press centre, just at the Castle Mimi, where this summit is taking place. Clea and I arrived this morning in a very different way than we usually arrive to these events, Clea.
Yes, I arrived on board a French military plane yesterday evening because of difficulties coming in to Moldova. The airspace is closed for the duration of the summit due to ongoing interference from Russia. And in light of these threats, the Moldovans have taken large steps to secure the summit. So, you know, local residents need special passes to circulate around the venue. It's also a much shorter summit with a lot of leaders leaving overnight.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing place. We're actually at a winery. It's called Castle Mimi. It's about 35 kilometres south of the capital, Chisinau. That decision told you there here is in part a security concern, really easier to secure.
Exactly. And the route from the airport is easier to secure than a route within Chisinau, which would have involved securing buildings, roundabouts amid high traffic. So that's why it was decided to be put outside. And so this morning we arrived on two specially chartered trains from the capital to here because there's no other way to get to the summit.
Yes, we were all there very early this morning, Thursday morning journalists queuing up from 5 a.m. at Chisinau railway station to get these kind of secret chartered trains to the summit here at Castle Mimi. But look, this is a big moment for Moldova. the country, it declared independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. Now, I caught up with Foreign Minister Enrico Popescu yesterday in Chișinău. And I must say, listeners, I was literally running along the street with the Foreign Minister. He's a busy man at the moment. He was going between meetings, between press conferences in the capital. And this is what he had to say about what this means for his country.
It's important for the European continent, for the countries of the European continent, to be talking together, to be coordinating between the 27 EU member states and the 20 states that are not yet or already not in the EU, to be coordinating, to be having a profound strategic conversation on how to bring peace back to the European continent, to show determination in our desire as the EPC to bring peace back to our continent, to dissuade future aggressions. So this summit has a major, major pan-European importance of pan-European scale. For Moldova, at the same time, it's extremely important. It's a sign of support for Moldova. It's a sign and a strong signal that Moldova is not alone, that Moldova matters. And that also gives us confidence that Moldova will also in the future rely on the support of our partners to keep our democracy intact and strengthening, to keep our stability and to continue our path to the European Union.
He also described how Moldova has been preparing for the summit and facing, dealing with those security challenges, Cleia explained there.
Well, we have been working as the Moldovan government and the law enforcement agencies and the security apparatus to ensure full spectrum security. We have also been working with our partners. It's public knowledge that for most of this week we also have a strong security presence from other countries working with us to ensure, as I said, full spectrum security. Now, the reason Chișinău is cordoned off, it's actually pretty easy access for people who walk. We just declared a couple of days as public holiday so that people don't feel the disruption. So actually most people prefer to go to the countryside. So if you see the streets empty, it's not because they are not allowed to, because actually cars can go and go through the street. But naturally, it's easier to manage security like that, but also people prefer it. But otherwise, everyone can move through the city, but of course, they have to accept that at some point, some junctions would be closed.
And of course, Cleia, I mean, I think we both reflected on the fact that it was quite moving here this morning when President Zelensky arrived. He was the first leader to arrive at this summit.
Morning, everybody. Thank you very much, Madam President, that you invited us. And I'm happy to be here.
Yes, we saw the Moldovan president, Maia Sandu, waiting at the entrance of the castle for several minutes. It went on in the blazing sun and we were sort of wondering what's happening. She said she was obviously waiting for the leaders to arrive, but it was quite a surprise to see Zelensky. There had been rumours he was coming, but it was not confirmed until the very last moment until he arrived. And it was a very moving moment. You saw Maia Sandu thanking Zelensky for protecting Moldova. Obviously, the Moldovans say that there were plans to overthrow Moldova, to overthrow her government in the wake of the attack on Ukraine. And Zelensky thanked her for welcoming all the refugees from Ukraine.
Thank you for Moldovan people, first of all, that you really you hosted all our people, all the refugees from the first days of full-scale war. Thank you. We never forget about it.
Like Madame President. And you could sort of see Volodymyr Zelensky sort of squinting in the sun. It's sort of, everybody else is smiling, but quite a grave, moved face, because it's obvious that holding such an enormous summit with so many leaders so close to the front line is something quite extraordinary here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was struck by the sense these two leaders, youngish leaders, standing side by side at this huge moment, particularly for Moldova being so close to the Ukrainian border, living in that shadow of Russia. It was quite a moment. Shortly after that, we saw the usual attendees at summits like this, the 27 EU leaders, plus leaders from across Europe, everyone from Rishi Sunak to Western Balkan leaders. But we do have to note, there was one no-show. We reported on this exclusively this week in Politico, that the Turkish president, Erdogan, fresh from his election victory last week, was not present. So that is perhaps a bit of a dent to the kind of mission, if you like, of the European political community, which aims to be a kind of a pan-European geopolitical force. On that issue, let's just talk a bit, Clea, about what the EPC, as it's called. What is this? It's the second meeting. We were both at the first gathering of this kind in Prague last October. Give us a bit of background about how the idea of the European political community came about.
Yes, absolutely. So the European political community came about from an idea that was thrown by Emmanuel Macron last year during a speech in Strasbourg.
Aujourd'hui devant vous, une communauté politique européenne. Cette organisation européenne nouvelle permettrait aux nations européennes.
And at the time, it was sort of dismissed as a little bit of an inspired stab in the dark from the president. I mean, there was no sort of explanation on what this community would be, what it would do, how it would work. And, you know, the French had to battle accusations that basically it was offering in the wake of the Ukraine war, and with both Ukraine and Moldova asking for accession to the EU, that he was offering a halfway house. So they've battled hard against that. Those accusations are still swirling around today. But basically it turned out to become quite a successful forum for leaders from the region to discuss. Now, what the future of this community will be, who knows? But it does appear to answer a need for wider discussions across the continent from leaders facing the disruption of the Russian aggression on Ukraine. But it does, you know, from the outside, sitting where we are, it does appear to be a bit of a big talking shop.
It certainly does. I mean, there was a very interesting paper that was published last week by a relatively new think tank, the Brussels Institute for Geopolitics, and they were making the point that actually, you know, not having deliverables, not having milestones, not having specifics is perhaps a good thing. That sometimes, you know, political dialogue is more important, and isn't it good to have these people around the table, these countries that share a continent, essentially? And this is a harking back to an earlier idea of diplomacy, a more 19th century idea of diplomacy. And of course, I mean, the EU officials who have been involved in preparing the summit have been eager to stress at every point to us journalists coming here that this is not about EU enlargement. That is a different conversation. They say, you know, Moldova, Ukraine, the Western Balkan countries, who all want to join the EU and are ostensibly on the path to that accession at some point, you know, there's going to be no decisions on that today at this summit. However, the EU has been increasing its support to Moldova over the last year or so. Just yesterday in central Chisinau, Moldovan and EU officials all gathered to mark the opening of a new EU partnership mission in the capital. And that's designed to help Moldova deal with issues like cybersecurity and other hybrid threats.
I am very happy to be here today in Chisinau to celebrate the official inauguration of the European Union Partnership Mission in Moldova.
One of the issues here is, of course, the accession countries wish to join the EU, and the whole question of EU enlargement is a really fraught one. But it was interesting. France, which is usually seen as a kind of a holdout and opponent to enlargement, President Macron gave a very interesting speech on his way here on Wednesday. You were there in Bratislava, Clay, and he seemed to be reaching out a bit to the east, if you like.
Yes, absolutely. It was quite striking because relations between Emmanuel Macron and the East haven't been easy. There's been a lot of criticism from the East about his, you know, wish to continue dialogue. It's suspended now, but at least at the beginning of the war with Vladimir Putin. And so there hasn't been easy relations. And yesterday he, you know, made a lot of overtures to the East. He said, you know, we haven't listened to you enough. We haven't acknowledged the suffering that you had under Soviet rule. And interestingly, he made some points on EU accession, saying that we need to enlarge very clearly, and that it's more an issue of, you know, reuniting the EU family, and that it's more a political issue and about peace and stability on the continent than about criteria that has to be respected.
One of the other comments he made in that speech, which is a huge theme emerging as a theme here at this summit, is the whole idea of security guarantees for Ukraine.
The arrival of President Zelensky here, as we explained, is a big moment. He is here at this summit, and he is very clear about what he wants from the NATO summit that's taking place in Vilnius next month. And that is A, NATO membership for Ukraine. That doesn't seem to be on the cards in any way at the moment, but also security guarantees. What did Macron say on that subject?
So Macron said that we must give Ukraine strong and credible security guarantees, which is really strong language. And he sketched out what he thought could be possible. So it's somewhere between Israeli-style security guarantees. So this is a packet of money given by the US to Israel to ensure its security and full membership. So somewhere in the middle. Now, this seems to be shaping up is that this would not be Article 5. It would not be the sort of security guarantee given by NATO, and it's more something that would come from a coalition of countries that would give some sort of commitment, maybe financial, possibly weapons. It's not quite clear, but that it would be more that would be sort of announced in some way ahead of Vilnius.
And we see some countries are wary of that, not least Germany. So it'll be interesting to see how that debate plays out in the coming weeks. Finally, it's always at these kinds of set-piece events, the main news often happens on the sidelines. As we've just been talking about, we've got the whole issue of security guarantees for Ukraine, for example, and there are other bilateral issues on the agenda. One of those is the current situation in North Kosovo. Both President Osmani of Kosovo and Serbia's Aleksandar Vučić are here. Now, the background here is that clashes broke out in North Kosovo last weekend over the installation of ethnic Albanian mayors in areas where Serbs are in the majority.
Tensions are flaring in northern Kosovo, where ethnic Albanian mayors have been trying to take office following April elections, boycotted by the local majority Serb population. On Monday, Serb demonstrations left at least 30 NATO peacekeepers and 52 Serbs injured.
Now, the United States and the EU have issued strong rebukes. Our colleagues Lily Beyer and Matt Kornichnik spoke to Kosovo's Prime Minister Albin Kurti earlier this week at a conference in Bratislava.
Now, we have a slight difference in approach, and I think that thinking of sanctions against Kosovo seems out of proportion and unfair.
Were you surprised by the reaction, though?
I was surprised by overreaction.
And have you talked to Blinken about that specifically?
We haven't talked together about this. Kosovo is a sovereign, independent country who wants to be a contributor to security and peace and best ally of the United States. But this has not to do with the United States.
Thanks to Lily and Matt for that. We'll be back just after this short break with more on Moldova's efforts to join the EU.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A message from Meta.
Cataracts are the world's leading cause of avoidable blindness. The Metaverse can help address that problem. A virtual reality platform created by Fundamental VR and Orbis International helps train doctors to treat cataracts, resulting in more confident surgeons operating all over the world. With virtual reality training, surgeons can practice over and over to gain skills. Meta and the Metaverse are having impact today.
Julian Groza is the Executive Director of the Institute for European Policies and Reforms, a Moldovan think tank with the aim to help the country one day join the EU. Speaking to him in his office in central Chisinau this week, I asked him how significant is the European Political Community Summit for the country?
Well, first of all, it's for the first time in the history of Moldova that we host such an important event. and in particular in these times during the Russia's aggression against Ukraine, the decision to invite Moldova to host such an important event is, of course, a sign of, you know, support and solidarity, not only for Moldova, which is the most affected country after Ukraine due to Russia's aggression, but also I think it's important signal of support also for Ukraine. And I think the importance of this summit for Moldova is that it provides a good opportunity for a small, tiny country like Moldova, affected by various crises and also being, you know, attacked by various hybrid instruments by Russia. It provides us an opportunity to play an active role, a proactive role in the region, and to, you know, to contribute to an agenda here in Europe.
But as much as the country would like to play a proactive role in the region and become a member of the European Union, it's still facing some big challenges. I asked Groza to explain more.
Unfortunately, for over 30 years since our independence, in spite of declarations of various governments and politicians to strengthen democratic institutions, to reform the judiciary, to provide tools to fight corruption, for years, in fact, that has been overlooked. And not only overlooked, but previous governments, kleptocratic governments, proxies of Russia, have not done or has done little to reform the country. Well, in the last years...
Over the last 2 years, under President Maia Sandu, Groza explained that the most important reforms have been in the area of the judiciary, including intense vettings of judges and prosecutors. New anti-corruption institutions have been empowered to fight high-level corruption, he says, and Moldova has increased its cooperation with the EU and other partners when it comes to rooting out corrupt officials and elites.
And the second vulnerability is linked to our security resilience. Moldova, unfortunately, has been subject of Russia's hybrid aggression using the information space, promoting the disinformation and propaganda, using political actors here as tools to propagate their narratives, to make the institutions and the countries more vulnerable. Russia was also using our economic and energy vulnerabilities. Just over the last year and a half, Russia was trying to weaponize energy dependency on Gazprom.
As Groza explains, even if Moldova isn't under military attack, his country is experiencing hybrid aggressions. And until Moldova can address these vulnerabilities, it's hard to see how the country moves from being a candidate to joining the EU. But despite the immense reforms underway to prepare Moldova for EU membership, I ask Groza about the actual scale of support in this country for the EU.
So I think now, as Moldova is a candidate country to become a member of the European Union, we definitely have at least two priorities. First is to make sure that we deliver on the reforms and we advance in approximation with the EU legislation, with the EU standards. We have a list of conditions to start accession negotiations. Hopefully it's still this year once these are implemented. Capacity building, capacity of the administration to deal with reforms and to properly implement them, that is something which is very much relevant to this process as well. And the second priority is very much to build up institutions, to build up resilient institutions with the help of our allies and partners to make sure that we are much better prepared to face, you know, cyber attacks, to secure our information space, to increase the resilience in our law enforcement and security institutions, to be able to effectively address all potential attempts of malign interference from Russia or destabilizing actions from the kleptocrats. Because these two together, the reform agenda with the work on the accession process with the EU and strengthening our security resilience and defense capabilities, in particular in the context of Russia's aggression in Ukraine, is crucial.
In the lead-up to the meeting this week, European Parliament President Roberta Metsola recently spoke to a crowd of an estimated 70,000 people who gathered in the capital to show their support for joining.
I am so proud to be with you today before this massive, massive crowd of people who believe in a European future for Moldova.
And yet, the scale of Russian influence in the country is not to be underestimated, as Groza has explained. And there are some who would prefer closer ties to Moscow than Brussels.
I think today we have increased the base of support for European integration in Moldova, for European accession. It was not always that the case. Unfortunately, for years, politicians, because of their geopolitical narratives and because they have not delivered on their promises, they divided the society in kind of pro-Europeans and pro-Russian. In the last year, in particular, things has changed because the European integration objective became more realistic. When we became candidate country to become member of the EU, more people realized that that is not a kind of fairy tale, that it's something which would happen, because it was not the case before last year. Second, I think what counts today is the fact that we have a governing majority which is pro-reform and committed to conduct systemic reforms. And that brought more support from our partners in the EU, and not only. Indeed, a few weeks ago, we had a large rally here in Chisinau. We had about 70,000 of people on the streets who adopted a kind of a resolution for Moldova to advance towards the European Union. And that is pretty much reflected largely in the polls. When you look at the polls, you would have about 55 to 60% of the citizens who would support Moldova's accession to the European Union, which is a slight change if to compare with 2 years ago, when it was something like 50%. At the same time, it is true that we still have a basis of members of our society, of communities, which are anchored in the past, which are anchored in the Soviet kind of past and in the Russian information space, in the Russian world. This is about 25 to 30% of the population, largely the Russian-speaking communities. I think what it is important today is that while, you know, the government is delivering to the needs of the people, while the government is managing the multiple crises in which we are, this would also help to limit the space of the populists, which are very much using the vulnerabilities to try to channel the negative energy against basically a pro-reform agenda and spreading a lot of disinformation very much close to the narratives of Russia.
And that was Julian Groza, Executive Director of the Institute for European Policies and Reforms. So that's it for this week's episode of EU Confidential, coming to you from Moldova, where the second summit of the European political community is taking place. Thank you to our executive producer for audio, Christina Gonzalez. Next week, Christina and our colleague Josh Pozaner are taking EU Confidential along for a ride on Europe's newest sleeper train. That's going from Berlin to Brussels. So tune in for that. Thanks again for listening. See you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.